Hi, everybody, and welcome again. This is our 34th program for the Volume 1 of Discipleship in the New Age, and we're still in Part 8 of our video commentary, and we're beginning on page 80. I thought it was a good time to stop last time at the point where he said a very, very sobering kind of assessment. And if it was an assessment of the people he had to work with then, who were especially chosen by their connection with Alice Bailey and with him and the Arcane School, you can make sure, or be sure, that it would apply to us as well. So every once in a while, the Tibetan gives his own clear view, very objective, and oftentimes not very flattering. But then again, receiving flattery from the teacher never got us anywhere. There was a thought form of the Tibetan created, and it was causing a lot of havoc, and people believed in it. And DK said of it that it provided its devotees with good words of mediocre cheer. Some strange kind of phrasing there, but basically it was patting its devotees on the back and saying, you're great, and telling them how well they were doing with their discipleship, and was causing a great rift in the group process. And DK had to step in and intervene, and the people who were most devoted to it were the people who were most damaged. So suffice it to say, our discrimination about who is the real Tibetan and who is a masquerading thought form, or what is a masquerading thought form, that type of discrimination is not as sharp as it should be. And from a personal angle, I've got to say, okay, the time of the reappearance of the Tibetan is coming up. And around the year 2025, he's not too specific about it, but the third installment will begin to go out. His bridging treatises will continue, and I just deeply hope that those who have already experienced what I would call the theosophical, early theosophical rejection, at least apparently, because many people read Alice Bailey behind closed doors, but that early and more outward rejection of Alice Bailey and the Tibetan second installment proved a great arena of contention. And she was rejected, and she had to move away from Crotona. You recognize Crotona as the California-based sort of reflection of Pythagoras's Crotona some 2600 years ago. She had to move away, and she did moved to New York and she continued her work, but the discrimination was not sufficient to alert people to the idea that the same vibration which sponsored much of Madame Blavatsky's work was enlivening the work of Alice Bailey. And now we have number three coming up. So you know there will be those who protest against it. And already there are false prophets who claim to be channeling the Tibetan for installment number three ahead of time, quite a bit ahead of time. So for those of us who are still in the body, when that time comes, let us be very alert. Well, the Tibetan is mincing no words here in this segue. I always try to bring in a little segue from the previous previous program, because it provides some continuity. There is just so much here to read and acknowledge and to assimilate that it's easy to lose one's track, even though the outlines are meticulously structured and the information is luminous and detailed. I often lose my way, and especially I find, you know, that the response, oh, that's where that came from. Things that had been floating in my mind for many years. And I realized that long ago I read it, but not with as much understanding as I hope is now coming to me from this video commentary approach. Of course, I've got a lot of, I hope, fairly acute observations in the written form of these commentaries. I don't know who has time to read all that and to try to apply it, but I supply it anyway, best I can, because however many years are left to me, whatever, I'm determined in emulation of the master to teach and spread the knowledge of the ageless wisdom wherever I can find a response. It's my little bit of imitation of the superior mind and heart of the great teacher, Master D.K. But take a look at how he's viewing us. I'll start reading where it is read. Okay. As regards all of you, with what do I have to deal? An untested group? A static group? A critical group? And a group subject to pronounced glamours? May I add, not just glamours, but pronounced glamours? Such is the material. Now that shows objectivity, looking at us not so much as phantasmagoric persons as material to be used. He goes on, such is the material with which I must carry forward my work. May I add, well, that's what he's got to hand. And so maybe Alice Bailey's idea of being not only second best, but perhaps third best for the Tibetans' purposes has something of reality in her assessment. But such a person she was, or, well, is, not a person now, more a soul, that she could, with that first-rate personality and first-rate mind, persist where others would have fallen down. You read some of the stories of, you know, toward the end of her life, and the Tibetan asked, can't I help you? But she wanted the karma that was associated with her present condition to be expiated. And so, quite bravely, even heroically, she said, thank you, but no thank you. I'm going to go through this and make up for what took place before. Maybe she called it the spilling of blood. Maybe it was a suicide event and its karma was having these almost daily transfusions of blood just to keep her going. Well, that's the Leo Aquarius polarity having to do with the bloodstream. Anyway, the Tibetan is under no illusions about whom he has to work with. That's us with all of our liabilities. But he was under necessity. That was the condition, that was what had been gathered, that was the state of the larger group to be divided into many groups of nine that had been gathered. We have what we have. So the Tibetan asks rhetorically, what can I do in such a situation, my brothers? And then he gives us something positive there. He says, well, I can trust. And as he says this, let's see if he could trust us, okay? I can trust your devotion to humanity, your willingness to learn, and your determination to proceed along the path of service at any cost. Well, right there, that might separate the sheep from the goats. In the business of occult training, I'd much rather be a goat than a sheep. You know, the Aries, Capricorn symbolism there. One being the seat of initiation at this time, Capricorn, and the other initiation in the far distant future. Well, when I read this, I see these words stand out to me, at any cost. We are told by the Tibetan always that we must count the cost as we are entering upon the thorny path of occultism. So he says, at least I can count on these things. Devotion, willingness, and service at any cost. I don't know if he didn't include group love. I think that was something the group members were trying to really learn, although he said they had a good start because there was this among them, this condition of unconscious friendship built up over many years, many lives. And maybe we too have these unconscious friendships without really realizing it. But if we were to examine certain past lives, which may be possible as we are trained in the new esoteric schools, then okay, we will see the origin of such unconscious friendships. And I've often said it, and the Tibetan has given us the idea that hierarchy is friendship in its truest sense. Now, this is the 23rd, and it looked like he was starting kind of a new theme on page 80, so we will assume that that is the case. I don't have a broadcast tonight, but a number of responsibilities and errands. Let's see how long I can keep going with this. He says, I would like to deal, first of all, with the objectives that I have in mind for all of you, you know, lest an individual think that the Tibetan is simply talking to him. He has that inclusive term, all. That's the thing about the two Dina books in the beginning and the end. These are instructions meant for all. And they are rich, rich, rich indeed, with the first of the Dina books being used with the letters of instruction to attract people closer to the ashram, or maybe into the ashram. And the second Dina book being a manual for initiation. Now, okay, the main present objective, what's that going to be? I seek, he says, to bring about a much needed group integration. Well, he keeps on talking about that, doesn't he? Group integration. Now, when people have that attitude of, I'm interested in myself, how am I doing, am I good, am I bad, am I, you know, it's going to work against the group integration. So, you know, forget the good self and the bad self, and let only Christ, the Lord Maitreya, be seen and heard. I seek to bring about a much needed group integration, he says. Much needed. Okay, so he's not pretending that it exists because it might cheer us along the way. The polarization of this group as a unity upon the mental plane is not yet accomplished. And I've gone over the idea of mental focus versus mental polarization. So wouldn't it be good, basically, if the group could be taking the second initiation or beyond, and then be in a position to achieve a true mental polarization along the Syrian path. But in any case, it's not yet accomplished. And that was then. Now, I don't think we should deceive ourselves and say, oh, well, it's 90 years later now, so now that mental polarization is achieved. I think by no means. DK goes on, it is most needed, and until this integration has been achieved, the united group intercommunication, and may I add, that would be a telepathic intercommunication. He goes on and says that desired group, the united group intercommunication will not be possible. Integration, communication, or the desired work capable of accomplishment. So integration is a key thing, and in Esoteric Psychology Volume 2, there are these wonderful old commentary integration formulas, we might call them. And I've recorded them and a few years ago and done my best to analyze how each ray type might achieve that integration. So the desired group work capable of accomplishment also will not be achieved. Now, pointing the finger, several of you, he says, need to do some careful thinking and should align yourself in love with your group, with your fellow disciples. Well, he's singling these people out for insufficient development of the love nature. And he goes on to say, eliminating all sense of criticism and personal satisfaction in your own judgment and rectitude. Now, may I add that these people then would be sitting in the seat of the superior person. And that in itself would be a cause of separateness within the group. Well, there's our main idea. I seek to bring about a much needed group integration. So integration of the kind he's talking about, based on love, and I would say on harmony and on shared purpose, is a foundational point if there's going to be this telepathic rapport set up. Well, it's been a while since I've read Telepathy in the Etheric Vehicle. I have a feeling it's a very rich book, and I would like to re-engage with it. It was the guiding book or series of lessons for the very first of the organized groups of nine, in which some of the more high-powered disciples found themselves. Alice Bailey, Foster Bailey, Regina Keller. I sometimes think some of these disciples would be horrified if they could realize that almost a century later their participation was being closely examined, and they were being maybe treated as special cases. Probably they would think that there was glamour involved and they did not deserve to be singled out for recognition. Who all was in that group? This was released by John Cobb of the School for Esoteric Studies, and of course it is the diligence of Keith Bailey, head of the AUM organization, that made it possible for us to actually know many things about these people. Not that we're interested in becoming personal, but interested in the energies which animated them. So there was this Herbert Adams. He was the head of a Rosicrucian movement, a third-ray soul. And there was Roberto Saggioli, who we all know was, well, we probably know, was an initiate disciple. A disciple who was an initiate who had taken the third degree, just the way Alice Bailey, with certainty, we have to say she took the third degree. There was Foster Bailey, as I said, who would be occupying the same position in Master Moria's ashram as Alice Bailey, as kind of a secretary, was occupying in Master K.H.'s ashram. There was Victor Fox, it appears. Let's see if I've... Yeah, I do. I do have it correct. He was Alice Bailey's secretary, a Libran man, and according to Eleanor Dramcini, who is an excellent rectifier, had Aries rising with a lot of 6th house and maybe some Virgo, strong Virgo planets. There was a British woman, Betty Harris, SCP. Probably we don't know too much about her, but she was a first ray soul. And, DK was pretty straight with her about a number of things. Then there was Regina Keller, who was, in a way, Alice Bailey's right-hand person and responsible for the editing of ever so many books. Once Alice Bailey had taken them down and prepared them to a certain point. There's also, apparently, Alice Ortiz, who, a very interesting person with 3/6 rays. And she was the individual responsible for creating the mental garden to which so many disciples in the body and out of the body could repair for refreshment. Now again, Elena has made a tremendous study on this particular disciple. And I have to say, probably for those who are astrologically astute, it would be very useful. Then John Tassin, who he has Masonic keynotes, beauty, strength, and wisdom. But he, it didn't work out with him. He was a first-ray soul and a seventh-ray personality and a seventh-ray physical, and he kind of reverted to contacting what's called fictitious inner brotherhoods on the astral plane, a facility that he had developed before when he was facing the boredom of monastic life in another incarnation. So what I'm trying to say is that some of the heavy hitters were in this very first group, telepathy group, and Keith Bailey's done a fantastic job here. Basically, he's organized them according to the groups in which they were found, and then one can kind of study their ray and astrological natures to see why did they wind up in that group. And what you do see is quite a bit of the first ray. Tassin, Betty Harris, Foster Bailey, and first ray also in the non-soul rays of others, like Alice Bailey, Ray One, my soul and mind, and let's see, who else here? Regina Keller, first ray mind, first ray astral body, and John, well, that was the soul ray. So, yeah, there we have quite a fair representation of the first ray, either soul-wise or otherwise, for this leading group. Well, we just have to extend our thanks to Keith Bailey for being so meticulous in organizing the memberships of these groups, and so we could study them. And those studies lead to revelations now hidden, but important. In all of this, we have to maintain an impersonal attitude. And I guess I didn't really show this to you. I probably should have here. But here are the first 9 people. Right there. With some commentary about what they became and what they joined later, and whether they were a member of the Masonic work that Alice Beatty was also sponsoring along the line of both the Scottish Rite and the York Rite. But I don't want to wander off too much, you know. If you really want to get the lowdown on all this, you'll talk to Keith, who is the most informed on these matters. So, going on. Now, the main and present objective we've looked at. And we have to love more, basically, eliminating all sense of criticism and personal self-satisfaction in our own judgment and rectitude. It's so easy to think that we know and others do not. That seems to be almost the very first response. I know, and you don't. Now, obviously anybody who thinks about that is going to know the limitations of such an approach. Just won't work. And no group integrity will be present. So this is where we take a look at the main first point, much needed group integration. The second of these objectives, which DK has had in mind for his group and probably will have in mind for people like ourselves when he again externalizes or in whatever way contacts us. See, we don't really know. For many people, the invitation to be part of those groups of nine came as a surprise. They were applying to the Arcane School. And then suddenly, because of old affiliation, there they are, being invited into the project which the Tibetan himself is carrying forward. And I guess, and I think, that most who were invited accepted the invitation. And some were written an invitation who had not applied to the Arcane School and were not pursuing that particular line of development, but the Tibetan knew them in another context. I think BSD, the Rosicrucian man, is one of those people. I'm not sure about Tassin. Apparently he and Foster Bailey knew each other because of the first ray Masonic affiliation. Well, so much of this is personal business. But if one can look on at the personality and determine certain trends, certain hints, certain revelations, that is okay, as long as one maintains that attitude of impersonality. So the second one then, second objective, that DK has, let us say, for them and for us, it is fundamentally necessary, he says, that the new groups which are inaugurating the new discipleship, because indeed that's one of their functions, should eventually establish a telepathic rapport with each other. And to do so, may I add that one must think outwardly in love. He says, simply that, my brother, think outwardly in love towards your group brothers, that these groups establishing the new discipleship should, according to the Tibetan, establish a telepathic rapport with each other, individual to individual, I would say, within the group and group to group as well. Later, he goes on to say, when there is a closer individual interrelation, it will be possible to give definite teaching, which will make this increasingly possible, but in the meantime, a hint will have to suffice. It is foundational in nature and will have to be accepted and somewhat understood prior to successful work in all these pioneering groups. And here is, I didn't see this coming, but, you know, obviously from previous readings, it was in the air in my mind, so to speak. Think outwardly towards each other in love. Just simply that, my brothers. Simply and humbly that, and no more than that at present. Maybe later, something more. Maybe. Okay. Now, not doing too well here. This is, hold on. Well, it seems that I've managed to return to a reasonable size here on the screen. Simply that and no more. Think outwardly towards each other in love. No more at present. Maybe one day when he's walking among us again, there'll be more. He says, can you accept such a simple rule? Apparently simple, apparently. In this way, the etheric body of the group of disciples will be animated by the golden energy and the light and love, the light of love, and thus a network of light will be established, which will form a focal point of energy in the etheric body of humanity itself, eventually in the planetary etheric body also. So here's the meanwhile, what we do. We think outwardly towards each other in love. Now, he says, this is apparently simple. And anybody who has been working in groups know there are these points of friction and disagreement and inner judgment and criticism, all such things would work against this simple requirement, of which, for the present, there are no more instructions than that at present. And have we practiced it? Of course. That's the question. So telepathy is required, and he has it with his groups of disciples, and so does the angel of the presence, and even, we might say, the monad, making its appearance in extension as the jewel in the lotus on the third or second subplane of the mental plane. So think of it for a minute, friends. Think outwardly towards each other in love. Now, you know, it's just so easy to think outwardly towards each other in criticism, disapproval, reservation, judgment. So if we work within a group, and so many of us do, how are we thinking of each other? I have to really ask myself that question, because I know I have judged, I have critiqued, I have felt I know and you don't. How do we do that? How do we think outwardly towards each other in love? Well, maybe we find the soul qualities, you know, and take our eyes off the negative personality qualities, which is very easy to find. Well, that's why he says it's apparently easy, apparently simple. Right here. Apparently simple. Okay, that's the second thing, isn't it? That he wants to get across to us, objectives, which of course means that we haven't achieved them yet. But he wants these objectives to be held in our minds, so we're actually moving moving towards them. I guess we can see that it would not have been easy to work in those groups. Now, what's the third objective? The general group objective, he calls it. This, he says, is the shifting of consciousness of an integrated human being, of all integrated human beings, in increasingly large numbers, onto the etheric levels of consciousness and activity. Well, this is coming for reasons which I have attended to. The eye is changing, and the ethers are becoming more activated. And finally, we begin to realize that the dense physical vehicle is a kind of, what's the word he used? Congestion in space, and the true physical nature is represented by the etheric body. So we are to become much more etheric in our perception. Now, that might not be so difficult. Let's just say that it's probably more easily accomplished because we are entering the age of Aquarius, which sign has a close relation to the etheric body, and as well included in relation to Aquarius will be Gemini, which also is closely related to the etheric body. Maybe Libra not so much, but Libra at least controls the balance within the etheric body. The three air signs of the coming age. Now, more and more people, increasingly large numbers, will be shifting their attentiveness to the etheric body. Sometimes, he says, peculiarly, there is no such thing as etheric consciousness. But here he talks about it, and certainly there is etheric activity. So how do we do this? This entails conscious work on those levels as energy units, each contributing his individual share and his special quota of energy to the sum total of available etheric energy, and doing this both consciously and intelligently. And when this is done, he goes on to say, the man is then ready for the first initiation and is a true occultist working with energy under hierarchical guidance. Now, I think it's very important that we notice what it is that prepares an individual for the first initiation, which is basically the etheric initiation, etheric physical. Second concentrates on the astral body. Third on the mental body and its relationship to the transfiguring soul. And fourth, to the destruction of those vehicles, which are the personality and the Temple of Solomon, the egoic lotus, and the fifth with the clearing of the way, so that the debris, using symbols here, from the egoic lotus's supernova, so to speak, is cleared away, and clarity of sight or revelation can occur. So, whenever this etheric body becomes a special focus, and that's why, of course, in future times, people looking at the etheric condition, the light condition within the etheric body, will know whether the individual is ready for the first initiation. Well, when a certain amount of focus is achieved there, under what signs? Well, there are quite a number that have to do with the first initiation, but certainly Leo, the sign of luminosity, related to the luminous nature of the sun, is one of them, and then the opposite sign, Aquarius, would be, and even Scorpio, which has a peculiar, he calls it, testing presence in the first three meditations, and is a sign of illumination in the series of initiations. Illumination. And then he includes also Gemini and Virgo. I suppose any sign can bring you some quality which is useful in taking this first initiation. So we contribute something etheric at this time when the first initiation is coming into sight, and the etheric, normal systemic etheric plane is archetypal to the dense physical and is meant to control the dense physical body, and rather than having the that physical body and its instinctual nature run away with everything, there is control from the etheric levels. And this attitude or capability of control signifies for us the possibility of taking the first initiation. But anyway, this is what DK wants us to consider as a group objective. And what would be involved here is the first step of group initiation. It will be a significant change in focus, and although Master DK never said that there was a change of rays between the etheric mechanism and the dense physical mechanism, from another perspective, they can be thought of as, generically anyway, as the etheric body being more related to ray 7 and the dense physical more related to ray 3. So he has in mind for us this change in the focus of consciousness. You got to kind of ask whether the group itself, as a group, had taken the first initiation. Individuals within it had, yes, all except for one. But would that mean that the group per se, considered as a wholeness, had taken the first initiation? Would it mean that? And now there is, let's see, how many of these do we have? Okay, we don't have. This is the last one in this series of objectives. And I guess we have to ask ourselves whether we are achieving these objectives. So, okay, this is the individual objective. And I'm just going to kind of review what we've got so far here. We have the main and present objective, and it has a lot to do with polarization of the group upon the mental plane, or at least the focus of the group upon the mental plane, so as to achieve the integration. So there's that main and present objective. The future objectives of these ashramic groups is telepathic rapport, person to person, group to group. The third objective is a general group objective, the shifting of consciousness onto etheric levels. And the fourth objective we're about to study. And it's called the individual objective. This, says the master, necessitates the preparation of the life and consciousness for this new process of group initiation. Now we have commented quite a bit upon the planetary necessity of group initiation. If the time-space schedule of the planetary logos is to be carried out with accuracy and without delay. This group initiation, says the Tibetan, is itself of real import and is dependent upon the unit in the group fitting himself for initiation, and at the same time learning to subordinate his spiritual ambition and desires to the group pace. Some move ahead, he moves after. Some move behind, he sets the pace, you know, from the rules in the road, of the road. I almost said the ruts in the road. But anyway, the group initiation, he says, is itself of real import and is dependent upon the unit in the group fitting himself for initiation and at the same time learning to subordinate his spiritual ambition and desires to the group pace. That's an important idea. And to the necessity of right timing, where his fellow disciples are concerned. I mean, if we want to advance a certain subject or approach within a group, we have to consider the condition in time and space of the group. Maybe the moment is not quite right. So then that psychic ability called right timing has to enter into the picture. This subordination, subordination, involves, therefore, a dual attitude towards the processes of initiation. The adapting of oneself to the needed integration and, secondly, to the development of spiritual responsiveness to impressions from the level of the soul and the spiritual hierarchy. It also involves the cultivation of judgment and of wisdom in the establishing of a right interrelation with the group of disciples, so that the group, in this case, my group of disciples, and definitely a group entity, may move forward together. Well, okay. Easy enough, unfortunately, to forget what one has read, but basically some have a faster pace, some have a slower pace. What is of value for the entire group? This group initiation is dependent upon the unit in the group fitting himself for initiation and at the same time to subordinate his spiritual ambition And I think so many more people have this spiritual ambition than may admit to it or even recognize it. So what is the group pace? Again, you may want to rush ahead because you can, or you may breathlessly be bringing up the rear and find it difficult to keep up, but there is a group pace. And we have to adapt ourselves to that. Well, until the moment when again that happens, let us be alert. I've met so many people who are taken by spiritual ambition, and the problem is that when thus taken, they may not even recognize that they are taken. So a dual attitude is needed. The adapting of oneself to the needed integration, which is love, fusion, a coming together in harmony, and secondly, to develop the development of spiritual responsiveness to impressions. Oops. We don't want that. That's just a bit too big, isn't it? And let's see if I can find a way. I don't know. Okay, little problem there I had. So the group pace is what we're talking about. There is a group pace. Even though some may move ahead, some may follow after, there has to be consideration of the group pace and no ambitious charging ahead. A dual attitude towards the process of initiation. So that's one. And the adapting of oneself to the needed integration. Okay. That's... Well, how to put this down? Okay, and then secondly, the adapting of oneself. Secondly, the development of a spiritual responsiveness to impressions from the level of the soul and the spiritual hierarchy. Now, I didn't get as far as I wanted to here, and what I'm going to do here is kind of put those things down in an emphasized way. And here's where I think I had to kind of stop. It also involves, this is important, it also involves the cultivation of judgment and of wisdom in the establishing of a right interrelation with the group of disciples, so that the group, in this case, my group of disciples, may move together. Now that's requiring a degree of sensitivity from all who are involved. Some must slow their pace, and others must hasten their pace. So the cultivation of judgment and wisdom is another factor. And let's see if we can apply this to our group work. This necessitates, he says, the same conditions for the group as always exist for the individual. Right integration on the three personality levels and also on soul levels, plus right impression or responsiveness to the spiritual and higher psychic gift waves, as the Tibetan occultists speak of them or call them. So coordinated movement, right? That's what's required. And let's see. A little more. This impresses me. This idea of moving higher and adjusting one's apparent progress to the welfare of the group. Otherwise, we have group members pulling in different directions, some charging ahead and some breathlessly trying to keep up. It does not lead to group integration or to group effectiveness. So I think maybe we can do just a little bit more here. From the Tibetan, this will take many years and the work of achieving finished group attitudes and relationships through individual understanding and this will take many years and the work of achieving finished group attitudes and relationships through individual understanding and true impersonality can go forward upon the physical plane whilst in incarnation, or it can go on out of incarnation with the same facility. Now this is going to be an important point. You must always bear in mind, he says, that the consciousness remains the same, whether in physical incarnation or out of incarnation, and that development can be carried on with even greater ease than when limited and conditioned by the brain consciousness. Now, for some people who feel that the termination of all consciousness occurs at death, this will be either a uplifting or nonsensical statement. But when we pass over, maybe after a certain interlude of awakening, entering into that light wherein consciousness awakens, free from the limitations of the physical vehicle, we are to expect that it will be the same consciousness, except maybe somewhat enhanced. Master Moria says, suddenly the man out of the body becomes brave, heroic, able to accomplish many things that before he hesitated to do. So, as DK says, maybe in a less dramatic way, that development can be carried on with even greater ease than when limited and conditioned by the physical brain consciousness. So some people think there just isn't anything else, even when you tell them about out-of-body experiences. They think, well, surely the brain was involved, but further research will demonstrate that the normal brain involvement is, if anything, much reduced. So, okay, somehow we have to integrate and yet be soul responsive. And we have to, he'll tell us, continue to work with those who have sustained their consciousness in a similar way, but have passed out of the body and are therefore still members of the group. It's not gone and forgotten. And this has to be proved and reproved to ourselves, because once we come down into the limitations of brain consciousness and symbolically a drink of the waters of the river of forgetfulness, Lethe, we just lose track of our inner experiences and imagine that those who are gone from physical incarnation really are gone. And that's not true. And especially DK does bring this up in the beginning of Dina, Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2. CDP is working with children. KES is working with military men. They all had passed on. Is it PDW? He's the Jesuit priest who was killed by the Nazis. Okay, he was working in DK's ashram and was preparing to transfer into his true ashram, which was that of Master Moria, on his first ray monad, apparently. They were active and they were busy, and they were carrying out the Master's behests. Only some of us, or, you know, the group members, had forgotten that they are still to be considered very present. So what applies to the individual applies to the group, and whatever kind of personality attention has to be given, attention to soul levels must also be given, and that is an art to be mastered, the simultaneous dual attention. And here is that idea of the dual attitude. The dual attitude. Hierarchy too has this dual attitude. They are increasingly moving outward, but as they toward humanity, but as they do that, they are increasingly moving upward and inward toward Shambhala. And, you know, one must somehow keep the balance. Okay, just a little more. The attainment, DK says, of these objectives. Now, he's listed four objectives, has he not? The last one has been the individual objective. The attainment of these objectives will involve clear vision and a keen and intelligent understanding. It will require the steady and conscious intensification of group love and group interplay. Like, we're not going to achieve these things without group love. That seems to be an obvious requirement. It will lead all disciples to live lives full of wise purpose and planned spiritual objectives, and at the same time, the service rendered will assume a definite and automatic technique of expression. Okay, I think this is something that we simply have to adapt our thought to, because he's impressing us with thoughts that perhaps before we had not thought of sufficiently. Okay, and then I will I think it's a good segue point, frankly. So let's see. This is page 82. Well, that's not the one I want, is it? And that's not the one I want, is it? That's the one. So just from page 80 to 82. And we've been working on program 34 and 35 coming up. So let's bring this down to where we're going to make our segue. And we say we have finished now with program 34, which has taken us from 80 to 82. And we'll be starting Yeah. Program 35. And we're still on part 8 of all of this. And I'll just say, I don't know when we'll start it, but hopefully tonight. And we'll start on page 82. Okay, so we're going to, all of us, Tuya and myself, and the communications team of BL and Joe and Michael and Mikhail and others who help us along the way, we'll wish you now lots of love, many blessings, and deep assimilation of this material. I mean, look, you can always read DK's words and hopefully my words, such as they are, lead to a little bit of usefulness to you. So I'll get this out to you as soon as I can, and BL will put it up on Makara, and Harold and Joe will put it up on YouTube, and we'll move onward. So, see you soon.